Hello, we're back at Jazz FM this week for February's Roundtable, which features two exceedingly sound women on sexism in the workplace, the value of regional diversity in radio, and much, much more. David Lloyd's back with some radio moments, Stu Clarkson's got the latest radio news, and it all starts after this.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics. Innovative solutions for creative radio people.
I'm Kelly Weil, head of creative team at 7 Digital.
And I'm Lorna Clark, head of BBC radio production for 6 Music and Radio 2.
And we'd like to apologise on behalf of Chloe Straw, who isn't here because she's had to go home and look after her little boy. So we hope he's better soon. Yes. And we're sorry that Chloe isn't with us. But on the 100th anniversary of women's suffrage, it seemed appropriate to have an all-women panel, and we've at least got two. But we're not going to start with women's issues, because this isn't the Fortunately podcast. I wanted to talk about regional stuff. You're from London, Lorna.
Yes.
You're from the North, Kelly.
The North.
There's been some work been going on recently. You know, England has suddenly become part of BBC Nations and Regions, and the Radio Centre are going out saying, hey, the world, you should pay more attention to what goes on outside of London. Mm. Where do we stand? Let's start with you, Lorna. What do you think of the whole kind of push to be outside of London, to have more network radio being made out outside the M25?
Well, obviously, it makes absolute sense creatively to be thinking outside of your own backyard. That's a no-brainer. My experience, personally, was, yes, born and bred in London, but I would never have got on in the radio biz if I hadn't taken those chances, which are outside of London. So I spent a year in Newcastle with Metro. I worked for BBC Cornwall. That was interesting. They'd never seen anyone like me before. And I worked in Humberside, and that rounded sort of, you know, out of London, out of your backyard sort of approach was absolutely vital. I met all sorts of different people. And yeah, you do get to realise that those communities are very, very different, distinct, and what they're interested in is not what you're interested in the big bad city. So for me, though, it's about being plural. It's both, it's moving both ways. It's not just about a push from London and the big cities out, it's the other way as well. I like nothing better than looking around the office and seeing and hearing loads of different voices and accents.
One of the things that Rig always talks about, Kelly, and, you know, full disclosure, you're on the board of Rig, as am I, but we talk about how sometimes commissioners based in London think that programmers and producers outside of London only want to make programmes about life outside of London. And I think one of the things we say is, well, no, we want to make network programmes, perhaps with a regional flavour.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it's understandable to a certain degree because we are living outside of London, experiencing those different cultures on a day-to-day basis. And actually, from our perspective, many of the presenters we work with are also based outside of London. And so, yeah, I mean, you are in danger of becoming sort of a professional northerner, which is a bit of a concern, but...
Well, it's limiting, isn't it? Why should you be limited in that way?
It is limiting, and I think part of the problem is from my experience so far, it's hardly any of the commissioning gets done outside of London. So in some way or other, it all ends up being done in London. And I'm not sure whether, you know, not deliberately, but I think if there was more commissioning done outside of London...
Does something like Radcliffe and McConey sound different because they are northern or because it's made in the north?
Both, I think. I think it's both. I mean, you can't really separate the two with Mark Radcliffe and Stuart McConey, but I think it's both. I mean, when we first started doing that show on 6 Music in the afternoon, there was a concern that because we were a practical thing, but because we were in Salford, we wouldn't be able to get the guests, the high quality of guests that we... But it's turned out that we can. And you can't separate it with Mark and Stuart, but I think it's very much both. As the same with some of the shows on 5 Live as well.
Because we talk, Lorna, don't we, about diversity, by which we mean race and we mean gender.
Yeah.
But are we concerned enough about diversity, meaning the nations and regions?
For me, it's too easy to just pick on, you know, the obvious, what do you look like? That's so old-fashioned now. It's got to be a richer deeper kind of understanding of what's different. If I think about, well, this job that I'm doing now, which I haven't been doing for that long, we've upped the diversity in the little production department that I look after by about 400%, which sounds massive. That's four people.
Good work, Lorna.
In just actively when I've been able to do it in just 6 months. So it's like, and why have I done that? Because I want more interesting people around me. You know, when we come in on a Monday and talk about what your weekend is, I don't want them all to say what I've done. It's got to be different, because that's how you get different ideas. So I think you can kind of sleepwalk into this idea that it's about looking around and seeing people who are a different colour. This country is way more complex than that. You can have someone who might be black and more upper class and middle class than anyone you've ever met. That what have you done there? You know, so it is more than
that. I don't
want
to just talk about the BBC here. I wondered whether you felt, as I sometimes do, that the direction of travel in commercial radio is the other way around.
Yes.
That almost they're saying, actually, it doesn't really matter whether the studio is in the north or in Wales or wherever it is, because we'll do all that because we're in London and we know best.
But why are you saying that? Are you saying that because there's been this move towards bigger brands?
And absolutely.
The stretching of brands, and actually their headquarters are in London, and you know, the rules allow you to not have to concentrate so much on the detail, maybe, but it still comes back to, can you find interesting voices who are not cardboard cutouts of the person who was on at breakfast to the person who's on in the evening?
Kelly, as somebody who runs a company, you know, based in London but with a lot of staff in the north, do you have any relationship at all with commercial broadcasters? Do you sell anything into commercial radio?
We sell via GTN, our entertainment news service, into most of the radio groups apart from Global. So, but really, our relationship there is not. We do have relationships with the individual stations and groups, but our principal relationship there is with GTN. So, we haven't really done very much in the commercial radio space on a creative content perspective. I mean, the Seven Digital business does other things in the tech platform and whatsoever.
It's just occurred to me that, of course, you two are sitting there being very convivial, but you are in fact competitors now under the current sort of BBC model, aren't you? Because if something is announced for Radio 2, your company will bid for it, and your in-house department will bid for it.
Yeah, All Six Music.
Yeah.
But to be honest, we were competitors before.
Right.
I think any supplier, it's just been put into a very formal, process-driven framework.
That's exactly what it's called, isn't it?
Yes.
The Radio Commissioning
yes.
Framework.
But
it's a very long document,
yeah,
isn't it?
But we were competitors before. It was always a case that every supplier, in-house or external, had to impress the network. Otherwise, it's their money. They can say, I don't want you to supply it anymore.
Yeah, I think the main thing that's changed with us is that occasionally we would be able to collaborate on certain projects with Lorna and other, you know, senior editors and so on, which we don't do that anymore so much since the change in kind of internal.
That's interesting, because I think that option's still there. I think
that's progress.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, I don't see the, you know, introduction of this new framework as a, I mean, because that would be nuts to cut out the opportunity to collaborate. What could get in the way is the business of that, because whether I like it or not, my overheads are way higher, probably double what yours are. They just are. I don't get to choose where my business is. It has to be in the West End of London. I can't place my team where I want to place them. They have to be there. So my overheads are higher, and the only shame is that the business might get in the way. But actually, to collaborate for either of those networks, it's still there. I mean, especially the things that are network owned, you know, like One Big Weekend or Biggest Weekend coming up. That's not about, well, I'm going to do this because, you know, my people are working on it. You're doing it because it's like a really big priority for the network. So it depends. This first 6 year cycle is going to be interesting, and we're not even halfway yet. But
not even 1 year through.
Well,
it,
no, but
just
for
about
us,
coming,
you know,
up,
second year
course,
for Radio 2, I think we're going to then see like how you go about it, because I think originally the feeling might have been for all suppliers, wow, there's so much jeopardy here, you have to pitch for everything. That's not practical. I don't think it's very smart anyway. You've got to be more strategic, so some things you'll go for and some things you won't.
It's funny, exactly what Kelly and I were talking about before you arrived.
Same conversation got we were to. Having, yeah.
You know, it's expensive, it's time-consuming, and it's confusing, so you've got to do that.
Kelly Weil is here and Lorna Clark is here. This is the Radio Today Roundtable for February 2018. Let's move on to talk about something else. Music. Ofcom wants to find out what new music means. Do we have any idea what, why, or indeed what new music does mean or doesn't? What's the issue here?
Well, we're both looking blankly. I don't know. I could guess, but I don't know.
I've read the stuff and I feel like it's vaguely interesting, but I'm not really sure. I can't really speak from a BBC perspective. I mean, the thing is, whereas the opportunities for promoting albums used to be vast, now that it's completely changed because whole albums are released at once and you don't get so many singles, and so the period at which a track is, you know,
just
considered
that sense
to
of
be
event,
new,
you know, in the old days, it really was an eventful moment when something was released or about to release, and you had a window in the pre-promotion and then afterwards. I don't sense that's the case now. And also, I mean, it will have a knock-on effect in terms of when the stations publish their playlist, what are they publishing? Are they publishing an intention to play tracks that are right for their audience, or are they publishing a playlist of new stuff? And if that's what they're doing, then you do have to pin down what is new. So for Radio 2, what does that mean in terms of how much new music they are obliged to play?
And isn't sometimes the best new music for a listener music that isn't necessarily new, but is new to them?
It's new to them. So there's that interest. And because you can discover music anytime, anywhere, on the move, not on the move, new is, becomes a whole, it's not a thing of time.
No, I'm wondering whether this is just the commercial radio lobby saying, we don't like the BBC playing the music we play, so here's a device by which we can stop them doing that. So let's make them play more quote-unquote new, i.e. unfamiliar music.
And the main change is, once it's been in the singles top 20, it then has only 4 or 6 weeks, I can't remember, until it's no longer classed as new. So therefore, it's less of a competitor in that really, really popular music in that space with the BBC.
I mean, if that is one of the drivers, that would be a mistake, because again, you just have to look at the stats, compare your commercial plays with, say, Radio 2 or Radio 1, and it's far wider. The amount of tracks they're playing is massively more. So how is this going to dent anything?
More from Lorna and Kelly after this.
Broadcast Bionics, solutions for radio, sponsors the Radio Today programme.
Kelly Weil from 7 Digital, Lorna Clark from Radio 2 and 6 Music. I'm Trevor Dan. It's the Radio Today Roundtable for February. Now, we are recording this on the 100th anniversary of women's suffrage, and it's not an entirely coincidental matter that we tried to book an all-female panel, so at least we've got two. I just wondered, in the most general kind of way, your careers, you know, when you kind of look back on the time you spent in the radio, have you come across a lot of sexist talk, and are you conscious of fighting to establish your gender?
Well,
I know that's a big question.
It's a big question, Trevor. Where do you get these big questions? Do you want me to?
I'm not sure whether. Well, I'm waiting to see if Lorna's going to go first, or whether she looks at me as if to say, "You go first."
I don't mind. You want me to?
I don't mind.
I'll go first. So, when you get to my age, with my many decades in the radio biz, you will have seen a lot of change. So, like a lot of people in the biz, I started in news. That was the easiest way for me to get my stripes in radio. And I can still remember newsrooms which had loads of journalists smoking fags, inside at their desks. And it was a completely different atmosphere. Yes, there was sexist talk. Yes, there were lots of assumptions made about, you know, surely you want to be the sidekick, you don't want to be the main event. There was all of that. I grew up in an industry where I frequently heard senior managers, BBC and commercial, say that certain voices, female, didn't work for a mass audience because a mass audience would turn off to a female voice. That's clearly nonsense.
They were often women as well who said that, weren't they?
It was, well, I would say in my experience, it was a mixture. It wasn't that it was just women. It was mainly men who were in charge, and it was a mixture of people saying that was the case. Equally, I worked at some groups where the most powerful and most high-performing groups in sales were all women. All women-led, massive records all the time. Why was that? I don't know. So it's been a mixture. But I certainly, yeah, remember lots of dodgy conversations, lots of dodgy things that happened. I think I'm just thicker skinned and just bounced it off. But
I made a programme for BBC Radio Nottingham for their 50th anniversary, and I interviewed Valerie Jones, who went on to become a correspondent. And she was telling me about when she first got her job at Nottingham. Mm. She was the first woman in the newsroom. They gave her a man's name. So she was known as Victor, which, really? Hey, we laugh about it now. But they were different times, weren't they?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I remember one story when I... maybe I shouldn't say which area because you'd be able to pinpoint it too much. But I was working in a newsroom, and it was when I was just starting out, and I had to keep my place in London and move up there for a couple of months to work. And the newsroom played a trick on me, which they thought was a great gag. They said, no, we'll book you in. We'll find somewhere for you to stay. We'll find digs. Don't worry. And anyway, long story short, they thought it was really funny to book me into a brothel. That's just, that's bonkers. And it was all about the big reveal at the next day when I went in. And they said, how did you sleep? Well, fine. But there were lots of people running up and down the corridor. And then they just told me this story.
Oh,
I was like,
God.
Why would you do that?
Because Valerie said to me as well,
that's
that
just wrong.
She said that the newsroom in those days at Nottingham had page three girls all the way around. And she used to say, you know, I'm finding that a bit embarrassing. And it wasn't until the second woman arrived in the newsroom and she said, I'll tell you what we'll do. So they went down, the two of them, and bought a copy of Playgirl with a full frontal man and stuck that up on the board. She said the following morning all the pictures had gone. Job done. Kelly, we're laughing about this now, but, you know, there is a background here of some terrible stories of abusive behaviour in the media. I'm just wondering if in your world you've ever come across any of that kind of thing.
Laughing at the horrific nature of what you do. Fascinating listening to Lorna talks about her many decades, but this is not very long ago we're talking about this, and I'm sitting here feeling really fortunate that I've come into this industry at the point that I did, because, I mean, I'm not sure, it's probably a combination of me coming into this in 2002 was when I first started working, as it was then, Smooth Operations, small independent company based in the north. Probably a combination of the times and also being in a small, what felt like almost like a family-run business, very, very supportive and pleasant and lovely place to work. And I can honestly say, I mean, we can all things that we've witnessed and that we've heard about that are unfair to both men and women. Mm. But I can also say, as a woman, I've never ever felt discriminated against or made to feel uncomfortable by anybody.
I'm certainly more conscious now when I make a programme for Radio 4 or Radio 2 or whoever. Not that I very often make them for Radio 2 anymore, by the way.
Drop that in. Hint, hint.
But I am rightly, I think, much more conscious that I need more women's voices. Mm-hmm. And it, particularly if you're making an archive show, it's quite difficult because, you know, it's mostly men talking, isn't it?
But I do sometimes... It's really difficult, isn't it? Because then sometimes we end up just sticking a woman in because it's a woman, and then what are they adding to the programme? And ultimately, you end up thinking, well, that woman was irrelevant. So it's about getting the right women's voices.
Exactly. That would be a shame. I don't think we'd ever condone doing that. But you're right. What you make today is going to be the future archives. And the programmes we make today cannot sound like programmes that were broadcast originally in the 70s. No, but it's just about making that extra effort. And it's, yes, there's an argument around the content you are responsible for, but there's also a big discussion to be had around the way you carry yourself around the office, which might not be as extreme as Page Three Girls or Page Boy, I don't know, Page Three Girls and Boys.
Centrefold.
On your walls. But there is a discussion about, you know, the responsibility you have as a senior person in bringing new people in. And sometimes you don't realise the influence you have. And there's a young individual who wants to do the right thing to impress you. And sometimes people don't realise the influence they have, that you can almost end up condoning behaviour that is not right. And I think we're now smarter about that. I mean, I've walked into meetings where it's my meeting and it's just been assumed, I don't know, that I'm there to do the tea. I've seriously had that in my career at the BBC. Certainly when I was doing Electric Proms, there was a classic where it was quite a tricky negotiation. So we had to get a lot of people from Network. We had to get the management of this particular artist. And I walked in and they were ready to, you know, get me to get tea, and then they realised I was holding the meeting, and it was like, oh,
eek,
that's happened.
I'm going to move us on because I know actually you've got to go, haven't you, soon? So
I've got to go to Radio 2 for a really important
for an argument.
I've got to make the tea.
No.
Is it a short argument or the full half hour? Okay. After this, we'll come back and find out what our guests have been listening to.
Your best content, shareable and discoverable on any platform. Oasis from Broadcast Bionics helps you build a closer relationship with your listeners. Welcome to the social studio at bionics.co.uk.
It's the Radio Today programme. It's the roundtable for February. And it's customary to ask our guests what they've been listening to. I'm not looking at a great sheaf of notes there.
No,
from
I don't
Lorna,
need notes.
Because you can remember them all.
No,
pick me a couple of things that you've enjoyed
recently. My listening habits around the time of pitch development.
Kind of
end up with me doing deep dives into, you know, the rounds that we've got. We've got a big round at the moment, so there's not a lot of extra time. However, at the weekend, I did take advantage of the Sirius free sign up, you know, have a listen to all these channels. It's fascinating what they've got there. You know, what was it? Peter Noon. Just really weird
selection. This is your Herman's Hermits man.
Yes, yeah. Really weird selection.
Not many people listening remember him, but I do.
But of channels. A wide selection of just weird, you know, rock channels. It's just interesting. I mean, if I get an email saying for this period it's free, I'll try it. So I've been experimenting just for my own pleasure.
I listened when I was in America last, because I rented a car, and I spent hours with Tom Petty Radio.
Exactly, that was on the
there you go. And it wasn't just him playing records by himself. It was things that he liked.
No, we
and it really worked.
We checked about 24 hours of programmes of all the music that he loved, and his voice. I loved it. I mean, yeah. I could just leave it.
As a programme idea. Oh, no, she doesn't do commissioning anymore.
No, it's my idea. I own that.
What's in here?
And now, a look back at season 2 of Tom Petty's Buried Treasure.
Oh.
Here's episode 31 on Tom Petty Radio.
Treasure.
something else. No, that's another company. Something yeah. else from you, I meant.
No, to be fair, it's been those experimentation and then things around Radio 2 and 6. I mean, I just can't underestimate the amount of little time I have left outside of, you know, sticking your head in the bucket that is Radio 2 and 6 music. They're 24/7, you know, outlets. It's hard.
Kelly.
Absolutely sympathise with that, because we're at our company, we're making 25 hours a week of content for BBC Radio alone. I can't even find the time to listen to our own programmes. I mean, I'm sure it's the same for
and you've
for
got
Lorna.
Work that you do for other companies outside of not just the BBC but outside of radio.
We do for other customers, and it's a real challenge because we're all. Those people that work at our place, we're all passionate about music. We're all passionate about radio. And it's a frustration
it's
not
really
to have
tricky.
The time. And we're constantly hearing about all this wonderful content that's out there. And to find the time to listen to it is hard. And I'm really trying hard at the moment
what we're doing is our own channel. So for me, it's Radio 2, 6 Music, World Service, because our team is providing programmes for that's business. Then separate to that, we are getting well stuck into podcasts. Then on top of that, it's going out to see music and all of that. Then I want a bit of silence, actually. So it's really hard to fit in extra bits of listening.
And I do, because much of what we do is music radio and other types of what you would call entertainment. As you know, I'm a big fan of sport, especially football. And so what I tend to do when I'm not at work is I put 5 Live on or Talk Sport, whatever day it might be, Tubemaster. And I listen to a lot of live sport. That's almost like my sanity away from, you know, the day job. But a couple of brilliant things that I've heard lately was a fantastic over an hour long interview that Mark Pugach did with Jimmy Armfield last year.
That was lovely, wasn't it?
And it was.
And wasn't that something else as well that worked because of its length? You know, an old programmer would say, it's far too long, you'll keep interrupting it with stuff.
Just to hear a proper in-depth interview with such a cool guy, knowledgeable, charming. I found it fascinating.
So how did you get back to Blackpool then and to becoming a pro after being in the army?
Well, it's an incredible story because I was at Lancaster, I was within reasonable distance if I could get home. It's getting home was the problem. It was 2 trains in those days, Lancaster to Preston, change Preston to Blackpool. But I was fortunate. I had a friend who lived here. He actually lived around that corner. He was an accountant in Lancaster, and he used to ring him up, and he'd come and pick me up, bring me down. And I got 1 or 2 games, I'd played for 1 or 2 third team games for Blackpool, and then it was in a third team game, I was the right winger. I was still playing on the wing from the 4 goals, and I wasn't having that much success. Anyway, our right back got carried off. I remember our trainer at the time, Sam Jones, said, "Nip between the 2 positions." So I said, OK, and I played there. The next time the team went up, I was right back. So it's been a chapter of accidents, really, as opposed to, you know, a planned career. But I think all of it's down to, frankly, put it bluntly, the fact I could run.
I was watching on the iPlayer some old episodes of Face to Face. Have you seen some of those have been available?
John Freeman.
Martin Luther King, yeah. Carl Jung. And
Gilbert Harding, who was then the very famous panellist, wasn't he? And he made him cry, asking him about his childhood.
And there was a great one as well with Tony Hancock. Mm. Just thinking, actually, that's brilliant.
Give
just
it the space.
A proper interview. Mm. And I realised how much of that we're so keen to move on to the next thing and pepper everything.
I completely agree. And don't you think that's something that podcast thinking has brought into us? The idea that length, that if you like what they call slow TV and we might call slow radio, is bringing to our thoughts. I love this idea of this radio station that's going to launch in Dartmoor. That's going to be the sounds of Dartmoor. Yeah. I was wondering, you know, that might be something I'd quite like a station that did crackling fires.
Yeah, birdsong.
Birdsong was lovely.
Make us feel warm and happy.
Yeah.
You know, I was trying to think of that in the context of where I live, and I'm not sure that a 24-hour station doing the sounds of Barnsley would work quite as well, but we could give it a good go. You know.
I think, by the way, how great is it that you can live in Barnsley and run a company based in London?
Brilliant.
That's good, isn't it? That it's wouldn't good. Have been allowed a little while ago.
No.
One more thing before I let you go. The Podcast Awards, they're back. The UK Podcast Awards, shall we be putting in for those?
Yeah.
Do we think that's a good thing?
No, it is a good thing. With my team, the thing that is very interesting is over the last couple of years, I talked to an assistant producer, a producer. They are listening to a lot of podcasts. Yeah. So, yeah, absolutely.
Again, and we've had this discussion at RIG, haven't we, Trevor, about is it podcast, is it radio, is it audio, what do we call it? I suppose however it's branded or however it's distinguished from one to the other, it's just great that people are still...
Isn't it, yeah.
People still want to hear great stories, interviews.
And the BBC Radio Awards are back. That's
for everyone.
For everyone. We can all fail to win one
lose.
Now.
All be losers together. But if you think about it, there's the Podcast Awards, the BBC Radio Awards, the ARIAs, the APAs, the AIBs, the New York...
You go as a supplier, do you go for everything? Do you basically make sure you're applying and putting in entries for every award?
I think a little bit similar to pitching, going for the programme, I think we have to make better business decisions, be smarter about how we do things, because no matter how good we think our programmes are, they're never all going to be good enough to win awards. So at the moment, we're obviously going to put a few things into the BBC Radio Music Awards, but just thinking about being quite brutal and only putting in the things that we think are really different and really distinctive, because the marketplace is so
competitive. It's a lot of work, isn't it?
It is. It's work, it's money. And,
well, you've pretty much got to have someone full-time on making awards, submissions, haven't you?
I think it's good news that all suppliers are doing the BBC Awards, because it would be really odd, especially yes. in the year of...
Well, that's gracious of you to say
but
so.
But it's true. It's kind of... We can't get to a point where this framework is making us less creative. That would just be bonkers. Yeah. So we all work for the BBC in some form. We'll all apply, you know.
Excellent. It's been lovely having you. Will you both come again at some stage?
Definitely.
Go on, Lorne.
All right, yes, yeah. Sorry, yes, yes.
For goodness sake. That was plain rude. We'll have David Lloyd's Radio Moments in a minute, but with thanks to Kelly Weil and Lorna Clark, let's have some news now. Here's Stu Clarkson.
Thank you, Trevor. This week, Christine O'Connell has confirmed he's heading for Australia when he leaves Absolute Radio this year. He's joining the Melbourne station Gold FM to do the breakfast show after 12 years at One Golden Square in London. Talk Radio has some new weekend shows to go with its recent weekday schedule changes. Gogglebox's Steph and Dom Parker have taken over 10 a.m. till 1 p.m. on Saturdays and Sundays. Meanwhile, the radio legend Martin Kellner is back. He's started on Talk Radio's weekend overnight show. Georgie Spanswick is heading back to breakfast at BBC Radio York. She's been doing the networked evening show on BBC Local Radio in England for the last year, but will go back to her old job from the end of May. Radio Leeds weekend breakfast presenter Johnny Ironson will take over the network show until it ends in the summer. Community station Tameside Radio has been in trouble with Ofcom this week after remarks made by a presenter about missing children. The regulator found the station in breach of its licence for the offensive comments. KISS has also been told off and found in breach of its licence as well. It played a version of David Guetta's Dirty Sexy Money with the F word in at 8:10 in the morning. Six new community radio licences have been awarded by Ofcom this week as well. They cover Banbridge in County Down, Paisley, Aberystwyth, South Dartmoor, Torbay and Burgess Hill in West Sussex. And the British Podcast Awards are back for a second year with entries now open. Comedian and podcaster Nish Kumar has just been announced as chair of the judges for 2018. You can find out more about the awards and submit an application at britishpodcastawards.com. That's it for this week. As always, there's much more online at radiotoday.co.uk.
From Luxie to Radio 3, 100 years of history. These are David Lloyd's Radio Moments.
This week last year, the talk was all about radio station style guides. One presenter had been a little bit annoyed about being told what to do and what not to do, and his station's style guide was leaked. Ian Lee on Talk Radio decided to talk about it.
Always say, then in bold letters, all the biggest hits, all day long, at the top of the link. Then in bold letters, never the end. All the biggest hits all day long at the top of the link. Don't do it at the end, guys, because if you do, a baby dies. Say the station name into the new song, you idiots. That's obvious, isn't it? If you're going into the new song, you say the station name.
Ian Lee on the Style Guide. I think most stations have got some sort of highway code, haven't they? Now, this year sees the 50th anniversary of a whole host of BBC local radio stations, including Radio Nottingham. And some people say that station had the first ever phone-in. That claim is contested, but maybe it had the first ever consumer phone-in. But anyway, it's good to hear an example of how the early calls sounded on air, not least when presenters and listeners alike weren't quite sure what they were doing.
And within seconds, in fact, we had a telephone call. It's quite fantastic just how quickly some people managed to ring in. And I'm going to talk to the person who rang in right now. And what is your name?
Colin Sampson.
And what do you reckon it is, Colin?
National Anthem of Belgium.
Sorry, Colin, you're not right. In fact, it's... Well, I won't tell you what it is, will I? Because we hope some more telephone calls.
Yeah.
Whereabouts are you ringing from?
From my home.
And where is that?
Berridge Road.
I see. Well, thank you very much for ringing in, Colin, and sorry you didn't get the right answer, but maybe better luck next week. Thank you, Colin. Bye-bye.
Sure.
Well, well, well. And the telephone is going again, so without further ado, I will pick it up and see who's on the line this time. Hello?
BBC Radio Nottingham, whose first phone-in aired this week in 1968.
Hello?
45 years ago this week, we found out who was going to run the first commercial radio stations. 13 bidders had fought the battle for the two London franchises, many fewer than on subsequent occasions, actually. The London Broadcasting Company won the news licence. Its shareholders included IBC Studios and Selkirk Communications. The company said it had cost £1 million to get on air, and they forecast that LBC would make losses for the first 2 years. Staffing would be 150, of whom 100 would be journalists, and they said practitioners have demonstrated that stations flourish only when they listen to the public as often as they talk to it. Capital Radio was the victor for the general entertainment licence in London. It was a company started by a Mr. Barclay White, a dentist from Weybridge, and that company was backed by Rediffusion, The Observer and Local News of London, a local newspaper group. Richard Attenborough, of course, headed the Capital Radio bid, and he promised the service would entertain Londoners and at the same time provide them with their own voice in their own affairs. It's 5 years this week since we lost Patricia Hughes.
BBC Radio 3 on VHF and on 1215 kHz, 247 metres medium wave. Good morning, everyone. For today, Friday, the 4th of July, it's Patricia Hughes in London. And in a few moments, we'll hear the time signal for 7 o'clock.
We have the overnight shift where you close down the night before, which would be about 1 o'clock in the morning, I think, and you'd then go to bed in the... what was then the Langham Hotel, which is still called the Langham Hotel, but that was our sleeping quarters. And then you'd be woken up in the next morning to open up the network for the 7 o'clock news, which you would be reading yourself.
Patricia Hughes, who died this week in 2013, she was 90. When audience figures come out, some stations talk about them on air. We're bigger than we ever have been. And other stations just ignore them. This time last year, Eddie Mayer on Radio 4's PM couldn't contain his excitement.
And as official figures show, PM has its biggest ever audience. We'll ask, what's wrong with you? With the BBC News, Charles Carroll.
Inspired teasing as ever. So what was the story?
The latest official listening figures for radio stations across the United Kingdom are out today, and they show that after 47 years on air, the PM audience has just reached record high levels. 4.2 million listeners can't be wrong, and if they are, well, who cares? What is it that's made PM the most listened to Radio 4 news programme after today? Well, here are just a few examples that demonstrate how fantastic we are.
He gets away with it, doesn't he? Beautifully written, brilliantly delivered, Eddie Mayer. In the 1980s, most commercial stations launched a second brand, eventually on their AM frequency. But it wasn't until 1996 that Wyvern's AM and FM in Herefordshire and Worcestershire went their separate ways.
Wyvern AM, Cloud.
Good morning, how are you? Monday morning, just after 7 o'clock. This is Wyvern AM 954 and 1530 Medium Wave. I'm Neil McLeod. We'll be doing breakfast over the coming days, weeks, months, and if the boss will let me, years. Great music, the best in travel, and me every morning. Looking forward to your company.
Was that the only station ever to launch with Barbara Dixon? I rather think so. What a great song that was. Wyvern splitting this week 22 years ago. The AM station was later sold on, and it wasn't often that that happened, was it? Talking of splits, it happened in Northern Ireland too, this week in 1990, and it was Neil again.
Good morning, and welcome to Cool FM, the new music radio service from Downtown Radio. Broadcasting 19 hours a day on 97.4 FM. We hope you will enjoy our programs, which will feature the music and lifestyle of the 90s. It's just gone 8:30. Stand by for Neil McLeod on The Breakfast Show, and thanks for tuning our way. 97.4.
Good morning, it is 8:30. This is Cool FM, a brand new radio station for a brand new decade.
Hello, Cool FM, as Downtown Radio split this week 28 years ago. So, with Mark Goodyear making his debut on 4th One 39 years ago...
I remember, and this was the same many years later at Radio 1, I really couldn't sleep for days leading up to it.
The death of sports commentator David Oates 5 years ago.
We're in Manchester today, where David began his broadcasting career a quarter of a century ago with local radio.
Pirate station Radio City closing when the government decreed its fort was in British waters 51 years ago.
And is this country becoming very slowly but surely a police state?
And the land-based Radio City in Liverpool getting its FM frequency 43 years ago, 5 months after going on air on AM only. Those are this week's Radio Moments.
Thanks to David Lloyd, Stu Clarkson, Kelly Weil and Lorna Clark for their efforts this week. Also Eve Williams, who assembles the panels for the roundtables, the next one of which, by the way, will take place in Manchester at the beginning of March. I've been Trevor Down. This was a TDC production. I hope you can join us again next week. Cheers.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creating and distributing clever software for radio.